Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, who joins us right now. Hello, Chad.
Hello, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. How are you today?
I'm good. No complaints. I've actually been by, but you knew I was coming by.
So. We did. But I'm saying, you know, that could be a new approach. Yeah, we can do the podcast thing. We're going to do that. But I like something more personal. Maybe just me and maybe Carrie, if he's in town, and a guest, and we just show up at your door and begin to have a conversation.
It's like when the special guest star shows up on one of those 80s sitcoms grew up watching or something, right?
Right.
I think a big cheer for the audience.
We're going to add a laugh track, too. I think that'll spice it up a little bit for us here.
You can't go wrong there.
Maybe they could add a laugh track to the final Patriots game. That might make it more entertaining.
Oh, boy. What do you want them to do? Do you play Joe Milton? I mean, lose,
yes,
right?
Yes. You got to lose. My gosh. Yeah. I mean, the only positive that can come out of this, other than what we've seen from Drake May, the only good ending to this is first pick, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think there's a possibility. I haven't looked today. I think there's 9 teams right now have below 4 wins. So they got to lose.
Right.
They can drop down a little bit. They have this incredible leverage. I know it's not a great year for quarterbacks in the draft. Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward from Miami. And then, you know, maybe some other guys who teams might talk themselves into taking in the first round. But there's going to be a handful of teams that really want to get one of those guys. And to have that leverage with the first pick when you're already set at quarterback, that's really rare, to have a terrible team, but you know you're in good shape with the quarterback. And so they have this great opportunity if they can just lose this weekend.
Yeah.
And stay in that position where they can trade that one overall choice to get a bunch of picks and repair, hopefully by drafting right, some various spots on this roster, because they still need a lot of help.
Well, that's it. Obviously, one draft is not going to cure it, but boy, if you could find a way, and I think they already have, 4 picks in the first 100, if you could find a way to maybe turn that into 5 and get yourself, obviously, a quality left tackle. And I don't know if it's Travis Hunter or somebody else, but I'm thinking a guy who could catch passes wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah, Travis Hunter's really interesting, because if they were picking like 3rd, you'd feel pretty good about that. But scouts seem to think he's profiles a little bit better as a cornerback and would be a 15 to 20 play guy on offense, which that'd be cool too. Travis Hunter and Christian Gonzalez out there locking down the corners, but they need so much else. They've got to get offensive line help. It doesn't sound like this is a great draft for tackles. The couple of banks from Texas, and then I can never remember the first guy, Will something or other, but he profiles as possibly as a guard. So this is not a year where there's like Jonathan Ogden or somebody like right. that at the top of the draft. So I think a lot of kicks at the can here is the best scenario for them, where they get a chance to draft a couple of players that's positions of need, and hopefully if Elliot Wolf's still running the operation, makes the right choices. It's been a long time since the Patriots had a top to bottom really strong draft.
You didn't pull any punches in your unconventional review, a little coaching malpractice there, leaving Drake May in after he'd already been battered about the head and face on multiple occasions.
Yeah, that's writing angry. I pitch to my editor, because when the game's going on, you're kind of talking with your editors and the other writers about topics and who's doing what. And my thinking was my angle was going to be the Crafts have to reconsider whether they're bringing May back based on this catastrophe today. And as I was writing, it went from considering whether they're bringing May back to they have to get rid of Mayo. They have to get rid of Mayo. And to me, it was because of the one thing that I think they've done right that you can really give them credit for this year, some way, somehow, is the way they've handled Drake May. That they played him at the right time. I think they put just the right amount on his plate, didn't ask him to do too much. I'm okay with not a lot of designed runs.
Mm-hmm.
But that was malpractice the other day, putting him back into the game after the first shot to the head that caused him to miss a series, sent him the blue tent, and then another one immediately after coming back that drew a flag, and then he nearly got his leg broken by one of those Derwin James sacks. If he hadn't kicked his legs up in the air, he would have been in big trouble. And you don't have your whole starting line in there. You've already taken guys out on the line. It was May couldn't explain it afterwards. Mayo couldn't explain it afterwards, and the reason he couldn't was there was no logical explanation for it. And to me, that's the tipping point. That's where he probably does not deserve a second chance to straighten this thing out.
Well, and the other thing, as you pointed out, beyond the development of Drake May, which has been obvious to anybody, they haven't really improved anywhere from week one.
No, they haven't. And I think Elliot Wolf actually gets a little too much grief. The Ladd McConkey Polk trade looks awful.
Yeah.
looks terrible. And I heard James White talking about this, the great Patriots Sir Downback, who goes on Brian Barrett on the Ringer Boston podcast, off the Pike podcast, after the game every week. And he said, I didn't even get on the field hardly at all my first year. People thought I was a bust. You got to give guys extra time. And the same case with other guys. I remember Shane Vereen didn't really play his first year, second round pick. So Polk deserves a chance because he looked good in camp. He was a legitimately good player at Washington, but it does not look good right now. McConkey is exactly what the Patriots need. But I think Wolf's done some good things. He got a third-round pick for Matthew Judon, who's cooked. I like the Hooper and Gibson cheap signings. Those guys were good finds. We don't know about the rest of the draft because Robinson and Wallace and guys like that really had to be forced into playing probably ahead of before they were ready. I still haven't heard what the solution was supposed to be at left tackle because the draft class wasn't great. Free agency wasn't great. So it's just clear to me that this is well beyond a one-year fix that's going to take multiple drafts. And this first draft doesn't look great for him, but I think he probably did more things well than he's getting credit for right now.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown. What's wrong with the Celtics lately? Is this just a championship hangover coming a little late?
Yeah, it's a few things. I think there's a little bit of fatigue, especially you look at Derek White looks half a step, three quarters of a step slow right now. Quick guards have been getting by him and Holiday and Pritchard all year. Look at Holiday, and he played over the summer. They played into June of the championship. I don't know how serious the shoulder thing is right now, but getting him this rest I think is a really good idea. It's tough when everybody's coming for you every single night of the schedule, and sometimes you're just not up for that. Sometimes you'd like to have a nice, easy one, and you don't get a lot of those when you're wearing the championship belt. So I think it's a bunch of things. My biggest worry, I don't have a ton of worries about this team. I think, like a lot of great teams, they can turn it off and on when they want to. We saw that with the first game against Indiana where they just elevated their effort. But the Porzingis situation really concerns me. I have some Bill Walton 87 vibes to this, not to the degree that he's going to play. Walton played, I think, 10 games that year. We'll see Porzingis much more than that, but he's really not moving well. I kind of wonder if they brought him back a little bit too early.
Right.
Their metrics are terrible when he's on the court, and I would like to see them shut him down for a little while here, even though they need him. But to me, that's their biggest concern because he's the thing that is like their wild card that puts them over the top from being an excellent team to being a truly great one.
Speaking of truly great ones, we lost one in the world of sports broadcasting. First, I was stunned, and I guess I knew this, but to realize that Greg Gumbel was 78 years old blew me away. And he was just the picture of consistency.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. He was 78 because he basically looked the same our whole lives.
Yeah.
On TV. It's interesting to look back in his career because you kind of think of him as the studio guy now, but he and Jim Nance switched jobs, essentially. Nance used to be in the studio, and Gumbel moved there for NCAA tournament, things like that. But you go back to the early part of the Patriots dynasty, he's the play-by-play guy in a lot of those games. He had the snowball. He's the play-by-play
right,
Phil Simms. And I think I might give Phil Simms a call this week, actually, to see if he wants to talk about Gumbel. He's just one of the, contrary to his brother's reputation, is one of the nicest people in sports media. And it was kind of cool to see, as sad as it was to find out that he passed away, that so many people had great interactions and great stories of crossing paths with him over the years. He seemed like a true class act.
Well, Chet, hey, it's great to talk with you again, as always. Appreciate everything you've done for us over the years, but we're going somewhere, but we're not going far. We'll track you down in a few weeks.
You better, yeah. I mean, I've been drinking out of my downtown mug today in tribute. Coffee, not whiskey or anything like that, but, you know, it's a pleasure coming on. I've always loved coming on. I love seeing the guests that really respect you and the approach you take to it and the preparation you put into it. And it's unlike any show I've ever been on, and I'm really grateful for that.
Well, we're grateful for everything you've done for us. And again, we're going to roll this podcast out sometime in the middle of January, and yeah, a couple other possibilities of things that we'll let people know about. But wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we'll be reaching out to you.
You better. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I imagine when you have further things to announce, I'll read about it in the Globe Baseball Note.
Yeah, that's look, we got more coverage in the Globe than we did in the Bangor papers. So, Pete Abe's got us covered there, definitely.
Oh, good. Well, that was a nice touch.
It was.
Pete. I was glad to see that.
So. Absolutely. Hey, thanks, Chad.
See you, Rich. Take care.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown.